This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Hello, Reese.
How are you, Trevor?
What's making news in the States about the environment?
Oh, yeah. Well, we've had a few little hiccups. Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Harvey prior to that, and now we're looking at Hurricane Jose in the Northeast and Hurricane Maria, another Category 5. Yeah, that's sort of preoccupying our attention.
When you take a look at that, has there ever been that number of hurricanes hitting the coast at this time of the year? I mean, I know that it's hurricane season, but has there ever been this number?
No, that's a good call. We've never experienced two Category 4 or above. That would be Harvey and Irma, smoting into continental United States in the same year. And just to give the listeners just a ballpark, and I'm sorry I can't convert. My brain is not as quick as some. But Irma brought 33 trillion gallons of water to Texas, Louisiana, Kentucky and Tennessee, the largest rainfall event ever recorded. And Hurricane Irma was the most intense 185 mile an hour plus winds for 37 consecutive hours. We've never seen that. We're off the chart for background on that. So these are angry. Mother Nature is angry.
As far as the effect on the environment, one of the things that I saw, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but I was looking at Vision Online, when they have these big tidal surges, then the water has to leave somewhere to be going somewhere else. And I think that it was, I'm not sure if it was a Caribbean island or something like that, where the water had sucked out.
Yeah.
And this was an ocean, and you couldn't see water for miles because it had completely drained out because the water had gone somewhere else. Is that right?
Tampa Bay, Florida, and the Gulf of Mexico had no water in its bay, mate. And manatees were like the dugongs, their cousins, were left stranded, and other fish and other critters, and you could not see the water. It went so far back. Oh, no, I mean, that's just ominous. And they predicted tidal surges of 15 feet. That's 4+ meters. I mean, this is just, there's nothing you can prepare for that volume of water when it comes in.
But I didn't realize, I didn't realize that water got sucked out from somewhere.
Well, it has to, because these are ginormous vacuum heat pumps that are literally sucking the water off the ocean, or the Gulf in this case, up into the atmosphere. So it's, you know, the tragic thing, of course, is the wild animals were just battered. I mean, you think of it, this is autumn, we're entering autumn here, and so many of them had stashed their caches for the winter, gone. And so they have no food and homes, and many tens of thousands of wild animals killed.
We've just got this text, which I think is a really interesting one. This person says, "Hi, Trevor. When it's our environment, including the plants and the animals, we humans may take ownership of our personal actions. Otherwise, the environment is an abstract that no one particularly owns. Campaigners for our environment could have promoted this way, so it involves everyone on a personal basis."
Yeah. It does involve everybody on a personal basis, because we all breathe air and we all drink water and we all eat food, and we're all one, really.
But it's real. But what they're saying is very true, though, because when we just refer to the environment, then it is an abstract, and people forget that it is something that involves all of us, that we're part of that environment, and that isn't just the environment. It is our environment and what happens around us.
Too right. too right, Trevor. And you know, that's why we encourage, you and I and others, encourage people to go back to nature and little steps. I mean, one great step, which most Australians have got nailed, is they have a couple of fruit or food-bearing trees, right? So the nature, our friend, grows us this wonderful bounty. We have to provide a little water, some wood chips, a little TLC, and at the end of the season, you've got more than you really know what to do with. I mean, how good is that?
I guess the other thing is to go outside or to recognize what's happening in your environment around you, but also mm-hmm. to recognize what's happening in other people's environments around them.
Yeah, exactly right. And a case in point with when Oz has cyclones or when we have hurricanes, it's like, wow, look at that. Look at the ferocity, because cyclones and hurricanes are nature's fiercest storm. And so we tend to take, some people tend to take a wee bit more notice. Certainly if they're in harm's way, they definitely get it. But then it goes kind of quiet, and it goes back to the environment as opposed to our. A great point.
I saw a terrific interview when those hurricanes were hitting some of the Caribbean islands, and they were talking about the effects on those islands. And they said, or the person that was being interviewed said, I wish people could understand what it's like for us when we live on islands that are so close to sea level and how these things are affecting us.
Good point, Trevor. Good point. And for the first time in 300 years, the island of Barbuda is uninhabited. 95% of all the structures were either destroyed or semi-flattened, and there's nobody there. And last night, the island of Dominica was smote with a Category 5 Maria. They've never experienced a Category 5, and they've got 73,000 inhabitants, minus dwellings or partial dwellings, and right at this moment, it's going into Puerto Rico, and they've never experienced a Category 5. So these are winds, much like the Category 5 cyclones, that lift the roofs right off homes. They peel them off. So it's very, very frightening.
John, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, John.
The article that I was referring to was about the marine parks in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And if the article is factual, which it should be by a fellow who's well-known and credited by as Tim Winton, it's a very alarming situation that the marine park system that was being set up around Australia looks like they'd be trying to dismantle it again.
Because what they've basically said is that they're going to rezone some of the marine parks.
Yes. Now, I don't know whether the article is partly political or in fact the truth, but if the way the article has been written, it's very alarming, and I think people should be very aware of it, and we should pay a lot more attention to the Australian marine conservation movement if that's required to protect the parks as they stand, and if not improved.
What they've said is that the marine park zones, there are different types. There are green, yellow, and blue zones. In 2012, 36% of the there was a 36% green zone, and that's going to be reduced to 20, which is high level protection. The yellow, which allows for sustainable use but protects the sea floor, is going from 24% up to 43%, and the blue area, which allows for sustainable use, goes from 40% down to 37%. So it's been a restructuring. So how that restructure, though, then affects the environment is the important part. Reese, tell us a little bit about are there marine park zones in the States as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I had a little Captain Cook at the proposed plan. And it's as John alluded to, it's very, very distressing, Trevor. Imagine, this would be an interesting little survey. Imagine if one in every two federal parks tomorrow, it was proposed, would lose their designation in Australia. Imagine how people would feel. It is very concerning because this proposal wants 38 of the 44 marine parks to be open up to trawling, gill netting, and long lines. Trawling, for those that are unaware, they drag a beam 300-400 kilos along the floor and smash it to smithereens. Imagine if you went to the prime growing region, let's say in New South Wales, along the Livermore Plains. Imagine if we rocked up there tomorrow and we compacted all of the soil that grows some of the finest food in Australia. People would be up in arms. And they've also want to expose, they want to expose 13 of the marine parks to subsea mining, and 42 of the parks, they want fossil fuel pipelines under the water. It's so distressing that 16 of the existing marine parks will no longer even be sanctuaries. Apart from that unimaginable destruction, it's really important that we all realize we're in the midst of the sixth mass extinction right now on planet Earth. We're losing plants and animals, Trevor, 1,000 times faster than the previous five mass extinctions, and it's all happening because of people. So the logical thing would be to do is to say, oh, let's put our foot on the brakes and ease back on this. You know, there's trade-offs, as we all agree. The last thing one would expect is that anybody would, knowing the severity of this situation, the last thing one would expect is for a human to step on the accelerator to try and destroy everything faster. We got to be really careful here.
It's also important, though, to find the balance between the looking after the environment and the marine parks, and also then trying to work into that the fact that we have to have sustainable fishing as well.
Well, currently we've got a bigger problem. I don't understand. I've been in the game 35 years. And you could, the listeners may call me obtuse or other rude adjectives.
Greeny.
I don't understand sustainability. I don't get it. Because what's happening currently is entire species of fish are gone. They're gone. So there's no breeding stock, so there's nothing coming back. The Pacific, Southern Pacific tuna are on their last. Bluefin tuna are on their very last leg. There's less than 3% of them on Earth left. Why there's any tuna fishing allowed until this population, say, got to 20% of what it was, is unbeknownst to me. But I can tell you this, that should we continue an accelerated bluefin tuna harvest, there won't be any bluefin tunas. And by the way, it's really important for the listeners to understand, because some of my scientific colleagues have been pussyfooting around too long, too hard. They talk of the year 2100. We've got to keep our eye on the field for the year 2050, mid-century. We're in a very gray zone here. So we've got to, as you say, we've got to find a balance, but things that are on their knees ready to exit the planet, we can't continue to harvest them. We've got to bring them back.
If you'd like to join us, 1-300-800-222, as we take a look at environmental stories, the ones that are around there at the moment. You have some good ones or some bad ones. What do you think are the things that affect your environment, as we just heard a listener say via text, that we need to look at it as our environment? And we also need to look at it not only as our environment and what affects us, but what happens with other environments. And it's not just people, Reese. It's how other animals are affected.
Yeah.
Mary joins us. Hello, Mary.
Hello. I just wanted to know, I've got a holiday place on the Bellarine Peninsula in a little place called Indented Heads, and I just want to know why all the sand has eroded. I've been going there since I was a kid. I'm very old now, but there is no sand. It's all been eroded, and all the rock pools where all the crabs and stuff used to be have all gone, and I don't understand why.
And there's also, I mean, if you take a look at the other side of the bay, Portsea have lost their beach.
Yeah, and I don't know why.
Yeah, sand erosion's an interesting one, Reese, because I guess if you're going to make changes to the environment, and I know that there's been an awful lot of talking about dredging within the bay, whether or not those things will then have a flow-on effect. I don't know if dredging has, in particular here, but what are some of the things that causes massive sand erosion?
Well, obviously, the tides, and to be candid, we have rising sea levels, and the warming of the ocean causes the water molecules to slightly expand. And with the warming of the oceans, of course, the currents are affected, sometimes changed altogether, sometimes they're slightly rerouted, and that can, depending upon the configuration of the bay, affect how it's swept. And also, if there are any storms, if you've had a couple of terrific storms, they can come in and do considerable damage, and then it could go back to normal, but it's not going to deliver back your sand.
Because there is normal sand movement from one area to another with tides and with, as you say, with storms. I know, because you notice it with surf, that sometimes there'll be good banks, sometimes there'll be not so good ones. Some areas, especially if it's sand dependent, will have no surf for a very long time.
And tides, and you know, seasonal tides. We're coming as we get toward the first day of summer in Australia, the tides are quite high, and sometimes those tides have quite an effect. And if there is a storm, then it can double down. And oftentimes, though, in bays I've seen over time, when the sand goes out, one day a doozer storm happens, and wow, the sand's back. So I think that's a give and a take process.
I got a text here that wants to know what you think of edible insects.
Well, you're probably all right, I guess. I've seen people eat the big ones, and I'm not an expert at eating insects, but
leave bees alone.
I'm a plant, and a fruit, and a nut guy, a seed guy.
Oh, yeah, because you're a vegetarian.
Yeah.
So there won't be any insects being consumed by you.
There won't be, no. No.
Yeah, I reckon I could give it a go. I don't think I could eat a big fat spider.
You get some venom in that. I'd stay away from the spiders.
No, you can eat, because they eat tarantulas, apparently. I couldn't eat anything that had squishy guts in it. I couldn't eat.
Oh, yeah, I don't, yeah, well, me neither, so I'm with you.
Harrow, good morning.
Yeah, Trevor.
Yes, Harrow.
Yeah, mate, I get really worried about people like Trump, and we've got our own selection of politicians here who just got scant disregard, you know, for all of the scientific research. You know, you're talking sort of 99.99% of the top environmental scientists and, you know, that are saying, look, you know, we're causing this, we're doing this, we've got to stop doing this. You know, they're looking at the dollar signs instead of the world being able to go on and survive, you know, for centuries to come. It's just, it really, really worries me that you've got these, well, I refer to them as half-wits, you know, like Trump certainly has got a, you know, there's something wrong with that guy.
Harry, I remember I was talking to someone about this the other day, and the conversation came around about the number of scientists. This is in reference to climate change, I presume, and saying that there were 99 in 100. But who's to say that the 1% were right? And I asked them if they went to 100 doctors and they were given a diagnosis, perhaps that... If you had 99 doctors say to you that you got food poisoning and one doctor said that you didn't, would you go with the one doctor that said that you didn't or the 99 that said you did?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's what I don't understand. However, that's for other people to decide. But that's one of the things that I find interesting, Reese, with all of this, is that you can believe the 1% instead of the 99.
Yeah, well, truth be told, it's the last great loot of our planet. I mean, this is unbelievable. This is done for one reason: it's power, it's greed, and it's money. And it stops for nobody or nothing. And even now, if we had 100% of the scientists that say we're headed down the wrong direction, in the last 15, 17 years of my life, the profession that I've dedicated my life to, science, has been so badly besmudged in the United States of America, and I suspect elsewhere, but I can speak for America, that people sneer at science, and they sneer at the environment, and it's measured, if the race is the first man or woman that gets to be a trillionaire, and the consequences of our planet are inconsequential to them. And as a human, as a dad, as a nature lover, it shakes me to my core to have to tell that.
Actually, I've got a text here that's asked if Donald Trump has made any comments about climate change in reference to the hurricanes that have been hitting the coast.
Yeah, sadly, I was on air last week on cable television, and the president of the United States came up with fictitious numbers suggesting that there had been far worse storms in 1930-something than Irma and Harvey. And the facts in the record books say otherwise. So there's something pathological very, very wrong taking place here. But it's not just at the top. This is... This is a multi-trillion, we value roughly, give or take, it's a $17 trillion a year fossil fuel industry, and it stops for nobody or nothing.
John joins us. Good morning, John.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. I'd just like to say, for the people who might be confused or scared, that we've had some really, really, really good news, like the best news like in 200 years, and that is that the alternative energy industry, the sustainable energy industry, the renewable energy industry is now more economically viable than the fossil fuel greed industry, which has the gall to say clean coal.
Yep.
That's interesting, because there is cleaner coal, Reese, but there isn't clean coal.
No, the ipso facto is when we burn coal, not only are we contaminating the air with heat-trapping carbon dioxide gas and others, but we are poisoning ourselves with mercury. And the oceans have tripled in mercury poisoning since the 1950s to over 80,000 metric tons, and mercury... methyl mercury is in everything. It's been tested here in America on our West Coast. It's in the soils, in the forests, it's in the trees, it's in the fish, fresh water, it's in the animals, and it's in people, Trevor. Mercury discombobulates our central nervous system. This is very, very serious, and the caller is 110% correct. We have the technology, and we have the workforce, but we lack the courage by the political leaders to break free from the fossil fuel subsidized industry, and it's wrong.
Royce, what's happening here at the moment is there are calls by some members, by some politicians, to actually stop all subsidies for renewable energy. That they should be completely stopped, and that there should be more money actually spent on coal-fired fuel.
Right. Well, you know what? We can't go back to 1861. And you know what? Here's the thing. Okay, let's take all subsidies away from all energy sources. Let the die on the table go. And I'll tell you what, there's not one father on planet Earth that would look into the eyes of their children or their grandchildren and say, mate, go for coal or go for fracking, when they know that it poisons the fresh water, the lifeblood of our planet.
Actually, it's
We're
good.
Killing ourselves.
It's a good point you make. Then take away all subsidies. If you're going to take away subsidies for the renewable energy schemes, then take all subsidies away and then see what we get left with.
Let's do it.
Because
let's
I wonder whether people
on the ground.
I wonder if people know how many subsidies there are that go into the coal industry and go into other industries.
Well, globally, the International Monetary Fund has recalculated, and they say $5.3 trillion globally each year is going into the fossil fuel industry, and the most heavily subsidized of the fossil fuel industry, coal.
There's a good idea.
You know, and I want to be even more specific. And you probably wrap me on my knuckles or my beak, and that's fine. But the biggest coal mine in the world right now is being proposed on the Galilee Basin, the Adani Carmichael coal mine. If it's so good, Trevor, if it's so magnificent, what in Tarnation Creek is the $1 billion subsidy? A long-term 40 or 50-year low-interest loan being offered to the Adani Enterprise Corporation. If it's so good, why did they need it?
I'm loving it, Reese. Get rid of all subsidies and we'll see where we lay. Kevin, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, mate. What really disturbs me is we cry about North Korea shooting rockets over Japan, yet Australia, New Zealand, United States let Japan go down and slaughter our whales in the Southern Ocean, mate, it's got to be stopped. And I've personally talked to my local minister, Warren Inch, and I think all Australians should get hold of their local representative and get something done about it.
It just keeps going on and on and on, Reese, and we know that it's illegal.
Well,
it happens in Australian waters.
And here, Trevor, the old dirty word, subsidies. Let me enlighten the audience, by the way. The reason we understand that Japan ever went down to the Southern Ocean is just after World War II, apparently they were obviously not in good shape. They actually needed to eat something. And MacArthur over here said, here's a couple of boats, go down there. And for possibly 20 years or so, the Japanese population ate whale meat regularly. In the early 60s, they stopped eating whale meat. As a matter of fact, approximately 2% of the Japanese population eats whale today. The whaling companies, of course, went broke. And the last two whaling companies that were left, the Japanese government bought them. And kept the industry afloat, subsidizing them hundreds of millions. They're building a new floating slaughterhouse right now, a couple hundred million dollar boat. And they take these incredible, highly intelligent, sensitive mammals, and they skewer them with exploding harpoons. It takes 45 minutes for these cetaceans to die. There's no abattoir on planet Earth that would inflict that kind of cruelty to these incredible animals. And then they take them back and they grind them up into dog food because nobody will eat it. And the kicker is, if that doesn't elevate your blood pressure, which clearly it does with mine, the whales are the greatest farmers of the sea. One of the unintended consequences of burning fossil fuels, 93% of the heat is in the ocean, It has disrupted the cold water currents from rising and carrying iron and nitrogen to fertilize the phytoplankton, the base of the entire marine ecosystem, which, by the way, provides all of us, 7.5 billion procreating humans, with almost 2 out of every 3 breaths of air. We're missing 40% of the ocean's global phytoplankton. The whales are farming it with their flocculent fecal plumes, their feces. They're fertilizing the sea and helping us breathe oxygen. And my colleagues in San Diego have been measuring oxygen levels in the atmosphere from Cape Fear and Tassie and San Diego every year, and our molecular oxygen content in the atmosphere has been going down for the last 20 years. We need oxygen, and the whales are bringing us oxygen. Amnesty!
Very nicely said, Bruce. Love it when you get passionate.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a text here from Jughead, which is an interesting one. Can you ask Risk about solar roadways, roads made up of solar panels, and why we're not using them? The thing about those, because I saw an article about this about 5 years ago and saying how good they are, but they're really, really expensive, aren't they?
Well, here, you know, thank you to the caller a couple times ago who said we've got great news. And we do have great news. And it started in Holland 3 years ago. They've got solar bike paths, right? They've got solar bike paths, and it's working. And last year, France said, "Oh no, mate, we can one up that. We're going to put 1,000 kilometers of a solar road." Trevor, they've got half of it done. And look, if we decked all the roads in solar, and so you logically, as a business person, you're saying, "Come on, Dr. Reese, it's expensive." Really? How about this, Trev? We take the $5.3 trillion that we're paying the biggest, wealthiest polluters, the fossil fuel industry, and put it in a fund where we can solarize and where we can protect our communities and where we can have kids with good long-term jobs. And the listeners will know this. The black lung disease that afflicted hundreds, possibly thousands of miners in Queensland over 100 plus years, it was stomped out, and it's recently come back 2, 3, 4 years ago, and there may be hundreds of workers who have a lung disease that's an awful way to die. Trevor, we know what the future is. Let's get on with it, mate.
Rosalind, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Look, thank you so much for bringing this to light. I was going to talk about the whales, and you've just already answered all of that question. Mm-hmm. But we get a lot of, I own an organic nursery, and we get a lot of scientists come in and talk about the chemicals that are going into the waterways, and especially the algae, saying how much that a handful of people only know that. Well, I'm selling trees for the environment and the oxygen that the algae are this most important thing that really nobody knows. And I asked him the question, why isn't this splattered all over the world news? And he said, because most scientists are quite demure people, and they're so sick of getting battered over the head by people calling them, you know, saying, oh, that's not true, this is true, whatever.
Rosen, I can say to you that global scientists now find it, not that they don't have the information, not that they don't want to impart the information, but doing interviews on radio and on television, they're sick of being battered.
Yeah.
But you want to talk about algal bloom, which is an interesting one, because algal bloom has been an issue in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I do. And also, too, that a gentleman told me that, because I promote vegetarianism and veganism to anyone that wants to listen, because just...
Excellent.
Because of the farming, it's just not sustainable, and my life is just tiny with the amount of science I've been into, what you guys know, but it was just, I say it every day, I wear it every day, I say we can't sustain it. And then one man came in, was doing the lecture, and he said that the largest use of marine animals are bovines now, because they're trawling the oceans and putting them into pellets for feedlots. And I just found that absolutely unbelievable. And is that true?
Yeah.
And is,
yep.
the future, or is this stopping? Is there some, you know...
Let me go back to Reese. Reese, you're going, yep.
Well, first of all, kudos to the caller. Second of all, the word that's coming up this conversation a lot are subsidies. The global fisheries are subsidized at least $250 billion to do terrible industrial damage to the ocean, feeding, getting subsidized to catch bait fish, to feed it to either farmed fish or bovines is ridiculous. And it's a lot different if it's a fisherman who's supporting his family and his community. That's not what we're talking about. These are floating slaughterhouses, and there's 44,000 of them working the sea 24/7, 365. It's the biggest massacre on planet Earth for wildlife. And the facts are, we cannot continue because we're running out of life to massacre.
Reese, algal bloom's an interesting one. I can remember down in Mandurah there were issues with algal bloom in the estuary. And what they did, they put a dirty great big cut into the actual bay so that the ocean could come back in again. And it opened it up beautifully and cleaned that area out.
Good, yeah. Yeah, well, one of the things we are faced with, particularly with warmer water, are what we're calling harmful algal blooms. And in these harmful warm water algal blooms, we've got this terrible nerve poison called domoic acid. And when you eat domoic acid, or when the little fish eat the domoic, and it biomagnifies up the food chain, it's a disaster, Trevor. And we have to be very careful, because what does result, and we've seen it all over planet Earth, are these mass mortality events where we lose millions, sometimes billions of fish, and the harmful algal blooms are implicated.
We'll take one more quick call from Remy. Hi, Remy.
Yes, good morning. I've been involved for 7 years with a program that's been put together by the Zoo and Parks Victoria. What it is, you've got the various marine life, irrespective whether penguins or albatross, they get caught up with waste fishing line. Now, I look after 8 bins in one particular council on the bay, and since I started in 2010, we've collected at the moment just 10.6 kilo of line of various denominations. Now, at the same time, I do have an article that I have from the Reader's Digest. 30 years ago, the Mediterranean was basically wiped out of tuna.
Yeah, look, Remy, I'm glad you called, because earlier we spoke about how important it is to look after our environment and recognise our environment. And to have something set up so that people's fishing lines don't get left around, aren't left in the water or left on the side of the beach or at piers, is such a good example, Reese.
Awesome. And we all, you know, all of us must do our part, because the industrial fisheries, Trevor, are leaving 646,000 tons of abandoned fishing gear every year in the oceans. They're floating curtains of death, and they're indiscriminately killing 300, according to the World Wildlife Fund, 308,000 whales, dolphins, and porpoises that accidentally swim into this, get entangled, and suffocate and sink to the bottom of the ocean. That's not on. It's just not on.
But it's also recreational anglers taking their responsibility and doing their bit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it baby steps. And if we all take 3 new baby steps, it is truly a win, not for us personally, but for our environment. And it empowers the people around us. And we're all powerful people, Trevor. And when we lock horns, we are an unstoppable force for goodness. And that's the future, yeah?
Reese, thank you very much for joining. It's always a pleasure.
You bet. Cheers, mate.
Dr. Reese Holter, our overnight Earth doctor.